talking about it today, so you can talk about it tomorrow. The Lisa Wexler Show, WICC 600.
You know, I've had so much on this show today in 2 hours. I've had more listener feedback in a long time. Every guest and everything I'm choosing to say before you, everyone's got an opinion. It's really good. Everybody's little gray cells are churning and alive. I'm Lisa Wexler. Welcome to the show today. You can be part of this segment, too, and give us a call at 203-333-9422 or send me a quick email at lisa@lisawexler.com. Those of you who write me regularly know that I do my best to respond. Joining us again now is Diane Cece, who is head of the East Norwalk Neighborhood Association. She's doing her best to be a megaphone about the kinds of things that are on the drawing board that might transform the neighborhood. Welcome back to the show, Diane. Hi.
Good morning, Lisa. Hi, thanks. How are you?
I'm well. Good. Diane, so tell us what people really need to know about what's happening with respect to the zoning for Norden, and what do you want people to know first and best? Go ahead.
Okay, so for today, because I only have a few minutes today, too, but for today, most importantly, are two important events coming up. One is tomorrow morning at 10:30, we're going to hold the second press conference and community rally in opposition of the Norden Distribution Center application for Norden Park. And that will be, we realize that there's going to be bitter and dangerous cold weather, but we really think it's important, and we think the community is behind this. So we're asking people to bundle up and show up and speak up. You don't have to live in East Norwalk to attend this. We've gotten widespread support of opposition from all over Norwalk and into Westport. So if you're concerned about this application, we urge you to show up and be seen and heard. We've invited all the relevant political players in the community to come and join us and hear what people have to say and make statements if they want. And the press conference will be brief, Lisa, but we intend to also do something a little different from our last rally to be just a little bit more visual in terms of the potential impact of this application. What we're going to do is, first of all, we're holding it on Strawberry Hill Avenue, which is the will be the main truck route coming in from the highway there. And so we're going to be asking for as many people to show up. If we can line the sidewalk safely on Strawberry Hill, possibly both sides, along the route that these tractor trailers will be going morning, noon, and night, so that it's visual what the impact is going to be there right on the residential homes that are right there at the streets. You know, people have to understand, this is not three-acre zoning over here. These are homes that are right there that abut the sidewalk at the road, and it crosses right past the assisted senior living center as well. So that's the first thing.
I want to just stop you right there, Diane. Diane. Mm-hmm. Diane, I just want to stop you for a second because we had a caller who called in the other day, and he is a trucker, very familiar with the way tractor trailer trucks have to go around. And he looked at this plan and said that he thought that what could solve a lot of the problems would be to create an off-ramp off of the bridge that's being repaired around Strawberry Hill. Do you know what he's talking about?
I do, and I was actually hoping to link up with him. I wasn't sure if Andrew or someone on your staff would be able to give him my contact information. I wanted to have a conversation with him offline after your program to discuss that, and also just his feelings in general, because he is a truck driver, and we want to have all perspectives on this. So we're familiar with two of those aspects, Lisa. One is the proposal that said the Zoning Commission would have wanted this applicant to go back to the state DOT for a dedicated ramp that goes beyond 16, goes beyond to 16 and 17 on the highway. And then this other notion that gentleman, Ken, I think his name was, brought up about the ongoing work now at the overpass bridge and how that might then be manipulated into a ramp. I have no idea how that would work even to be able to visualize how that would work and how much of an impact that would still have on the immediate residents right there.
Right.
If it's at the
bridge. You would want to know that, of course.
Right.
Right.
And, the other thing is, too, is that they have to understand, too, it's funny he brought that bridge up, because of all the things we're dealing with here as volunteer community advocates, now we're dealing with the kind of a, I don't want to say conspiracy theory, but people are asking a lot of questions now about how the Strawberry Hill Avenue Bridge is actually looking as they're rebuilding it versus mm-hmm. what they Why? Thought it was going to look like. And speculation Uh-oh. that bridge is being widened, not just for the reasons the public was told in the beginning and how it was funded, but that they may have known all along that they wanted to try to make this a route that would accommodate tractor trailers to get in and out of that site. So, you know, just another leg of research that we have to try to do to see has anything changed with that bridge relative to this development. Because all of this really, Lisa, you know, I was thinking about this while I was holding for you. Who would want this distribution center here? I mean, it really comes down to the crux of the question. Who on earth would want a massive 19-dock, hundreds of trucks a day distribution center in the center surrounded on all sides by residential with no easy access to the highway?
A tenant who believes that it would be a very easy way to get goods to people who live in our area. That's who would want it.
Well, if you say goods to people, that's another part of the conversation. The applicant has applied to the city on the premise that this operation will be strictly wholesale to business customers. So, I mean, if you're talking about that and you're talking about 19 docks and hundreds of trucks a day, and a couple of the references they give as potential tenants are things like electrical and plumbing supply houses. How many electrical plumbing supply houses do we possibly have in Fairfield County, Lisa? I mean,
And they might be much smaller. They're not. The scale is different. It's a totally different scale. Totally.
I'm so glad you get that, because that really goes to the crux of the question. And then when you couple what you just determined there on your own, correct, with the fact that they still will not identify who the tenants are, of course people are panicked about this thing. Because once zoning approves this, you can't unring that bell. This thing is done.
I understand.
And if they approve it for business to wholesale and they seem to think it's innocuous, the applicant comes back 6 months later and cries hardship.
That's right.
And then no one has the political will to say no.
You know what it is? It's the toe and the camel under the door. Totally. It's exactly right. Happens all the time.
And then we don't know what the role of the state is in this either, because that gets my back up, too. You were just talking before about this. I can't even keep. Here's the other thing. It's like we're playing whack-a-mole in Norwalk all the time. I can't even keep up with what ultimately ended up as the legislature, the proposed bills regarding local zoning up there. I heard you mention it at the top of the hour
now. You don't even want to know. It's unbelievable what's going on.
Oh, no, I do want to know. I mean, is there now a to block them from controlling local zoning, or what was this latest thing you mentioned?
So there seems to be there's a very strong movement in Connecticut. Some of the names are like Desegregate Connecticut. Others are a Yale Law Clinic that brought a lawsuit in Woodbridge. And then there's just a progressive caucus that believe that and the members of the Working Party, which are about one third of the existing Democrats, belong to the Working Party. I think it's called the Working Party.
Yeah, Working Families Party. Yeah,
Working Family. Thank you. They are concretely policy wise coming to a groupthink that the source of racial inequality in Connecticut, which is a real issue, no question about it, can be solved by zoning. And the latest is that they are parsing the old 1980-something Supreme Court decision, the Sheriff case, and they're looking back and they're saying that Connecticut didn't comply with what the U.S. Supreme Court said we were supposed to do. That's one piece of news that came out today. And the other piece of news has to do with a report that's come out that is basically looking at all of the zoning in Connecticut, a lot of which is single family, et cetera, and it is saying that the zoning per se doesn't comply with the Supreme Court, that apparently, and I didn't read the decision in a long time, it's a very long decision, said that we needed to create a wider array of housing options. That's what they're saying the decision said. Again, I don't know if it's true. But there's a pushback by Republicans, and again, I don't know if it's all Republicans, it's some, to say, you know what, we need a constitutional amendment in Connecticut to protect our local zoning, because this thing is coming hard at us between the eyes, and if we don't stop it, and if we don't stop it, Connecticut is not going to have control of its local zoning.
Right. That's the thing I heard you talk about today, and that's what I hadn't heard about until I tuned in with you. Because I found that interesting, because it does then talk to the sense of, one, the urgency of it, and two, how comprehensive the effort to stop the local control really would need to be. And I'll tell you, one of the reasons when you brought that up, I was concerned. I'll go back to one of your tapings, even if you have a minute. I kind of let this fall off of my radar screen after a show of yours. Because back in October, it was October 23rd, I have the exact date, you had Senator Bob Duff on your show. And you had asked him specifically about these potential upcoming controversial legislation bills being advanced after the election. Of course, the election hadn't happened yet. And you mentioned the regionalization of schools and this and the zoning, the local control, and even taking the word neighborhood character out of the context. Mm-hmm.
They want to do that big time.
Exactly. And Senator Duff's response to you, and I don't know if I got it verbatim, Lisa, but you can play your tape from October 23rd, was that absolutely no merit to it, that it was a Republican scare tactic, and there's no truth to it. And that he only said that they, of course, will always be looking to rely on 830G standards, which have to do with how you, you know, control affordable housing, yada, yada. So it kind of, you know, on October 23rd and before the election, I'm thinking, okay, maybe, you know, this, maybe we don't really have to worry about this. It's not going to see the light of day once they hit January. Then I tune into you today and I hear the rest of the story and the possible advancement of the constitutional
amendment. It's not going away.
So people should
it's
be
not
very
going away.
And people who are concerned about it shouldn't be labeled as something contrary to supporting all different types of housing in all different types of areas. Mm-hmm. I think that's unfair. I think we should be able to have an adult, intelligent conversation about zoning in Connecticut and not have anyone who shares concerns about state control, you know, be labeled as someone who's against affordable housing or NIMBY. And, you know, and honestly, whenever you think about state control of anything, I think you almost said it before. Just look at how well our state operates. Do you really want state control over things like your zoning in your town or your city? You know, that's a slippery slope.
I think it's almost a rhetorical question for most people.
Yeah, I agree. I'm so glad that you keep bringing this up because it's important.
Thanks.
And I think what you need to do is, like, you know, I'm a mere mortal here, Lisa. I'm a volunteer. What I know about zoning and all this stuff, I fit on my pinky. I think we really need to start getting some of the people who are accountable and some of the people that are accountable. So even in Norwalk, the fact that we are exhausted after 9 months of battling this Norton, and now we have to have a rally in the bitter cold. We still have the public hearing on February 8th. All of those things, even public hearings, are a complete advantage to the applicant. The residents walk in the door completely disadvantaged from the second you open your mouth. So we need to start having a conversation, you know, locally about how these things get to be where they are. Where are the real controls? What do residents really
have? Well, is planning and zoning, you have to refresh my memory, Diane, is planning and zoning elected or appointed in Norwalk?
In Norwalk, it's appointed, and they're two separate
boards. So that's
it. There's a planning board and a zoning board, and they're appointed.
So you need to check. You need to look at your charter and see whether or not grassroots you want to change that. I can tell you that in general, when asked, I always prefer elected to appointed.
You know, and a lot of people do. And sometimes when they bring that up, I'll just say, well, look at who's in elected positions today in your community and see if you're happy with that. Because you know what? That could fall under be careful what you wish for. But
no,
I
don't think
my personal view on it, though, Lisa.
Not if it's – no. I don't agree. Two-year terms, accountability, at least you have a grassroots opportunity. And I'll tell you something else. This is what I think is key. You always have to remember, and I always assume, maybe I'm I'm not cynical enough, but I always assume a measure of goodwill in people that are running for volunteer positions. And I've had no reason to think otherwise in my town of Westport. Mm-hmm. People are not paid. They're volunteer like yourself. And, you know, whether I disagree with them or not, I really feel they come from a place of genuine feeling about whatever it is they're advocating. Sometimes mm-hmm. there's a conflict of interest. Sometimes they're a contractor or an architect and they shouldn't be on a board. That's another mm-hmm. conversation. But if they're elected, you know that ahead of time. And you can mm-hmm. decide whether to vote them or not, whether to nominate them or not. At least when they're in, they're accountable to the audience that put them there, which is the people. When you're yep. appointed, you're accountable to the person who appointed you, and it's very different. It's
right,
very different.
And that brings in the whole politics of it as well, even though elections do too. But I was just about to say, and I definitely get your point there, but my thing, even when the last time we looked at the charter, Lisa, was that we should be examining every elected position in the city, because some of them actually do need to be extended out. I think it's stupid we have a two-year mayoral term. But we mm-hmm. just think it's a non-starter to have any conversation about adding more elected positions or lengthening the terms in the absence of term limits. That's an important conversation that needs to be had in all these communities.
Well, I can see that too. Yeah. The thing is that you can't really do everything at once, Diane. You're going to have to make the strongest argument that you can. You can make the strongest argument that you can for the incremental change that you think is the most important to make. And that's the one you go for.
Exactly. And, you know, it's right now being consumed with Norton, it does mean that, you know, some of the resident groups here have had to step back from even analyzing what would be like the low-hanging fruit or the most effective way for us to move forward. But I do feel once we get past February 8th, and then whenever they make their decision, we hope it goes in our favor, of course, that we can move on and start having, you know, more of these dialogues that say, you know, how did we get here? I'm a huge proponent mm-hmm. of root cause analysis, Lisa, always.
Yeah,
we have to go back and ask the question, how did we get here? How was it even in our zoning reg that this application could even be considered? So we have to go back and take the time and look at these things and try to be proactive instead of reactive, playing whack-a-mole on every zoning land use in this state. So
Diane, let me just wrap it up. Okay, I have to wrap it up. I got to run. But Diane Cece, just tell us one more time tomorrow, if you want to show up about East Norwalk and you care about this issue about the Norton development, where do you show up? Where do you go and what time?
10:30 tomorrow morning at Fitch Park, F-I-T-C-H, at 73 Strawberry Hill Avenue. It's a public park. We can park there. We'll have a megaphone. We're going to have a little press conference, maybe a couple of speeches, and then we're going to line up. Hopefully everything will be over and done within 45 minutes because it's cold. And then for people to mark their calendars, Monday, February 8th, 6 p.m. is a public hearing. Visit us at eastnorwalk.org to get on our list and get everything you need to know.
Thank you very much, Diane Cece with the East Norwalk Neighborhood Association.
Have a great weekend.
We'll be right back with more. You too. We'll be right back with more of the Lisa Wexler Show. Stay tuned.